Welcome. This is the session on authenticating REST and mobile clients in the REST adapter using either LDAP or an OE Realm, you know, configured plugin that we've written for that. Okay? My name is Mike Jacobs. I am a senior software engineer. I have a lot of background in using LDAP directories, and for my ills, I created the OE Realm stuff. So, getting started. Just a general process flow. Going to talk a little bit about configurable authentication in the REST services. We're going to talk about LDAP in there, then moving on to OE Realm, and then when things don't work, what do you do? Well, they're not working for me this morning, so I have some really good log files to show you what, you know, you might be able to see out there. The first thing, okay, has anybody in here been working with the REST services, the authentication? Okay, we have one, couple, three in here. Okay. The REST services use a Spring Security framework. Okay, it's an industrial strength, well-known security framework for web applications, especially running in a Tomcat type of environment. Okay, so that thing is completely configurable. What it does is provide a fixed authentication and authorization process. In other words, it always runs the same steps, you know, each time a request comes in. Okay, so nothing, there's no alternate, there's no conditionals in there. What it is that when it runs that, it's highly configurable with what exactly happens in each one of those steps. Okay, and that's what we're doing here, is we're going to go in. Okay, the first part is configuring it, so it runs the same process, but it's running, doing the authentication against an LDAP server. Then it takes whatever the authentication process brings back, and then does URL access control checking, you know, immediately after that. Same process. LDAP authentication. Okay, who's used LDAP in here? Well, we have some people, as in use it as a client or administered it?
Client.
Okay. Well, that's something. Just to set the level set here, LDAP is most often referred to as used to authenticate, you know, users. Okay, LDAP is actually just an API and a wire protocol. There's no storage there. It's just a connection to something. The back-end storage is completely independent of this, and that back-end storage is called a directory service. It's a hierarchical tree of object storage nodes. And within those nodes, okay, you have attributes. Okay, if you think about it, the storage nodes are like, you know, records and tables, and the attributes are like fields in your table. Okay. The thing with directory services is, even, you know, with something like Windows, okay, Active Directory, that's a directory service. Okay, that every place that you deploy your application into will have a different hierarchy structure of where it stores user accounts, groups or roles, how those relationships between those objects exist. So the first thing that you think about when you're going to go with LDAP is, I have to, you know, talk to my admin and get the parameters that I need to do that. If you're going to talk to an LDAP directory admin, there's some terms that you need to be aware of in this, in that every one of those object nodes in there has what they call a distinguished name. Okay, really what it is, it's a unique name within the directory space, and it actually provides you the ability to start at the root of the storage and walk your way all the way down through the tree to exactly where the node is stored. Now you can have the root DN. There's always a distinguished name for where the top root node of the tree is. And then you can have fully qualified names, which is everything from the root down to the storage object. And then you have RDNs, which is relative distinguished names, which means that it's the path from wherever you happen a node happens to be down from there. So you're going to be talking about DNs. The next thing is search root. It's directory trees can tend to be very, very large. And the larger they are, the longer it takes to search. Okay, think about an index tree, you know, in your database. The larger that index tree, if you start, you know, right at the top of that until you get down to the leaf nodes, can take a long time. Well, what if you could start your search in an index tree right in the middle of it, okay, by address? Well, that's kind of what you have in directory services is. When you say search something, you always think in terms of where in the directory tree to start searching, and then you search down from that location. Okay. The other thing that you'll notice about directory services is you generally have to, in a production space, have to log in to be able to do anything. So in our case, we're trying to authenticate somebody. Well, we have to be able to log into the directory server so that we can actually search for the user's account so that we can then try and validate the password for it. The only way that you can do that in an LDAP directory tree is you always have to log in, or what they call binding, using that fully qualified DN. That's why you have to search for the account to get that, so that you can actually then log out of the account used for searching and then log in to try and validate the password. Now, why are you doing that? Why, if you've already found the account name, why can't you validate the password there? That's because production systems, generally the access controls in there, prevent any user except for the administrator, who you're never going to get the, you know, account of, and the actual, you know, account user can see that password in there. It has nothing to do with, you know, being able to reverse engineer it or check a hash again. You just plain can't see it. So that the only way most of the time that you can do this is actually try and log in as that user. Okay. So just when you're coming up, prepare to ask for, you know, the network address and port for the directory service. Okay. What is the root DN of the directory service? Okay. What is that? So here is DC equals foo, DC equals com. The DN and password of an account that has query privileges. In other words, this is the account that you would log in with to actually find a user account. Then the DN of the object where the user account search will start. This is that search root. In this case, O equals users, OU equals employee, DC equals foo, DC com. Okay, that's a fully qualified DN. In here. Okay. Different directory services actually store the user's account name, what they log in with, in different fields, i.e. attributes. Unix-type directory services typically use an attribute name, UID. If you go to an Active Directory name, it's a different attribute. Microsoft tends to store their login names in a thing called a SAM account name for something. Okay. The admin will tell you which one he wants you to use. Okay, because he's maintaining, you know, this information. The next thing is, REST services are all role-based authorization. You don't get to access anything in a REST service until, one, you've authenticated, and then you are authorized based on the roles that user has been granted, in this case by the LDAP administrator. Then you can actually, you know, pass through and execute something. So with LDAP, we need to do the same type of lookup, which is find the groups that the person has been granted access to, get the name of the role name that's stored within that directory object, and then understand what the binding attribute name is between the user account, user ID, and the value that's stored inside of the directory service. All of this is going to be fed into your REST services configuration. So I've tried to align these things for you and, you know, provide you a checklist of what information to go out and then which pieces of the information goes, you know, into the configuration. Sound complicated? Yeah. If you've done simple user ID and passwords, this is way complicated. Okay, so the user ID and password goes right there. Okay, in the URL, the path is the root of the directory service. Then the what they term the attribute in the configuration manager DN is the fully qualified name of that account that you can search with. And the manager password is that account's password. Yes, Frank?
You mystified me. You said pointing at localhost.389.
Yep.
That the username and password goes there.
Host name port?
Yeah.
Root DN?
Yeah.
User account? DN of who you can log in to search with.
Where does that go? Because now you're pointing at manager DN.
Yep. Manager DN is the property name.
Okay.
The value is the LDAP user's fully qualified DN.
Okay.
And manager password is that account's LDAP password.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
This is your query, your query account.
Yes. That gets you in so that you can try and find something. Okay. In a separate authentication provider within the REST security configuration, you will find this LDAP authentication provider. This is the configuration information that you will use to do searches for user accounts and groups and roles. The thing that you're, let's see. Here's that user search base. Where is it? Where do you start searching in relationship to that root DN? Okay. This is blank. So what that means is that you're going to be searching from the root. If you do put something in here, it is a relative distinguished name, which it means that the value here is appended to that root DN. That, so it's a relative to the root. The user search filter. LDAP has a really baroque type of, you know, format for searching. In this case, it says search for something that has a UID equal to the username that was passed in to be authenticated. Okay, that squiggly brace 0 means the zeroth parameter. So it's token substitution. So that's where, that's what those are. Then, if you find the account, here's the base for the searching for the group. And there's a search filter again that says, look for somebody, okay, whose member attribute matches, and there's a, that token substitution again. In this case, that token substitution is going to be the fully qualified DM of the account that you just found in the user search, okay? Again, relative. And the last is for the group, okay? In this attribute, you will find the name of the group that, okay, that person is a member of.
Is this the response?
This is the response, okay. This is what comes back to you when you do the authentication.
The groups are what, you know, something that comes back, okay. And the last one is, Spring has a convention in it. It, because it's role-based, you know, authorization, it wants all of the role names with a capital role underscore prefix to it. So in this case, any of the group names that comes back from the LDAP server is prefixed with role underscore.
Can we go back to the previous slide?
Sure.
Because the, under the manager DN, where you have the UID there, that's the ID of the account that's authorized to access the LDAP.
Yes.
Where are you specifying which user you're trying to verify? Or is that your...
I definitely know what the answer is. What I'm contemplating is, how do I show you?
Because I've seen this requesting the... This is kind of requesting the authorization, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one's a response for the authorization, but I don't see where it's...
How does that tie in?
Yeah.
Ah. Can I expect you to automatically know that? Probably not, I suspect. Okay. It's a... In Spring Security, there is a well-known place, okay? It's a dynamic resource.
Okay.
Okay. And there, under the static auth, you'll see a login and logout page. And in there, you'll see the paths to that dynamic resource, and then the form, you know, field names of how to fill that in.
Okay.
Spring, this provider, will parse the form.
Okay, so there's another piece of it that's not...
That
probably
is the front end that's supplying this thing.
Okay.
Yes, Bill.
The comment, you said, this is not the request, this is the configuration of the fee.
It's the configuration
to... This is not actually sent. This is how you define this in your configuration.
Okay.
And so when it actually goes to make the request each time, it uses this information.
This configuration.
And that,
I see. Okay. Okay.
This is just configuration.
This is not the... Okay, I apologize. Okay.
No. I thought it was a reasonable question. Okay. So that's what it looks like. Okay. I have... This ran at home this morning, but of course it's going to defeat me and not run here. But I would like to take a minute and actually show you a live directory. And so you can, maybe some of this will, okay. This is not... Okay. So can you see that? It's a little small up there.
Small.
Yes. I'm not sure that I can actually make it any bigger.
It's the font that's small, not the bubble.
Yeah. Unfortunately. Okay. You have to get on your... Your magnifying spectacles. And here, my root DN is DC equals ACWD45, which is the name of my laptop. DC equals com. I totally made that up. It can be anything. It's whatever the admin wants to name the root to it. Okay? Within there, I have an object node that is a collection of other objects. In this case, it's groups. Here's where I have defined all of the standard PSC, type role names that I use in my Spring security authorization. You go in, you look at this thing, you'll find that. One thing that I will caution you against is the LDAP plugin for this. Uppercases everything that it pulls out of the registry. I think it's a bug, but that's its behavior. So even though I have mixed case in there, whatever comes into the REST adapter for authorization is going to be all uppercase. And then I have a collection object, which is all the user accounts, and I've just made it simple, flat space, which means that when I start searching, it's going to wander down through this whole thing until it finds this guy right there. If I look at what is inside these, let's say, again, it's hard. I do not think that I can expand it or zoom it.
What's that? There you go.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
There you go. Perfect.
What? Hi.
How are you? Thank you. I would have not thought about that, frankly.
Maybe you can turn down the light.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, turn them out. Turn them off.
So here I have the user account Fred, and Fred's fully qualified DN is up here at the top. It's UID equals Fred, OU equals user. OU stands for organizational unit. It's a collection. And then the root DN. And there's a bunch of attributes in here, and you'll see CN, what they refer to as the common name. And down here, you'll see UID. So that's what it's looking for in that search. If I come over, how is that used? If it finds it, and notice there is...
I like your description with the password in it.
There's no password in there. Okay.
Your description there.
Ah, that's because the default is it hides the password from me. How are you going to think I'm going to remember something like the damn password? Because I have to write it down. But that is the point. There is an actual attribute in here that stores the hashed password, but the access control is blocking me. Okay. So once I find the object where the UID equals Fred, I can get it gets the fully qualified UID and uses that to search for groups whose unique member attribute contains Fred's fully qualified DN. So that's how the mechanism works. And why am I going through all this? That's because if you're trying to debug your configuration, there's no way to do it other than know how the process is supposed to work so you know where to start looking. And that's when it finds the unique member equals Fred, and then that's the name of the role in the common name. Now, if I go back, if I am successful, if you take a look at that, Look at that. There's my group role attribute. It was under CN. It said, you know, PSC user. So if I uppercase that, and then I have the role PS, you know, role underscore PSC user that's evaluated in my Rust. Search filter, member equals. Well, guess what? That ain't gonna work. Unique member out of the directory service, right? Okay. And then when I search for the user, there's UID. So that's how all this stuff binds together. Now, the only thing that I'm not really showing you here is that the REST authorization controls, they do case-sensitive compares. It's not like OpenEdge. Most of this stuff is case-sensitive, so if it doesn't work, you need to start looking to make sure that the roles that were returned from the LDAP server and, you know, it's checking against the access controls, the case matches. Yo?
How many roles comes back from the LDAP? Is it just one role or multiple roles?
It can be as many as are defined in there. There's probably a practical limit, but not really. Okay, questions?
So you usually have to live with what your LDAP administrator has for roles, and then you have to configure your configuration based off what they have.
The LDAP administrator is the dog, and you are the tail. You go wherever the dog wants to take you, basically.
No, the way the tail should whack the dog.
Well, you may think that. But I've been wagged a whole lot over the day, years. So, okay. But you start off with that. When you get there, you know, these are the guys that are going to be setting this stuff up. For you, you're trying to unit test with this thing to become familiar with it enough so that when your customer has a problem, you can help walk them through the process to debug the configuration. That's the main point. Okay? Any other questions? Comments? Okay. Have I already got smoke running out your ears? This is advanced stuff.
Yeah, a little bit.
Oh, boy.
Continue on.
I was negligent. I should have warned you that this is advanced configuration. But you're still here, so hang in. Yes?
Before you move on to the oil realm, I had a question regarding the login handlers. We have like the custom login handlers that comes with the configuration file. Is it possible to configure a more elaborate login handlers, like for example, a password has expired or the account was, you know, locked from LDAP?
Okay, one of the reasons I picked Spring Security was that there's a lot of open source modules for it that you can get. There's a lot of help online, you know, in terms of configuration. And that configuration can be as varied and as complicated as you're able to handle. I could take an entire session and just go through the most common configuration cases and not touch in all the ways that you could, you know, split up the URL space into different authentication realms. You can have part of your REST service authenticate to one location. You can have a different part of your URL space authenticate to a different location of a completely different type. It's whatever you can get working and support for your customer.
Those configurations that you showed, they're in the Spring XML file?
In the web INF directory is a list of templates. And I emphasize these are templates. They're to help you get started. They are not meant so that you can just drop it in, turn the key and go. Okay? Some, you know, assembly is required, as they say. But it is complicated enough that I put in a number of configurations. Okay. And that's part of some of the basic rest. Okay.
Now, after you've configured one of these templates, where does it go?
It goes, okay, fair enough. This is way messed up. Okay, I am running a Windows 7 VM in here, and the display is not behaving nicely. Of all the odd things, when I run Windows, it always punishes me.
Agree.
It always punishes me. Nah, it's just not going to play. Inside, every web application has a web.xml, which is the web applications configuration. Inside there, you'll see there's a context attribute that says, this is the Spring Security template file to use.
Okay.
So it points to that, then... You point to the one that you want to, you know, use. Again, depends on where you sell your product into. They will probably choose what, okay, type of authentication that they want to do.
So LDAP is a service.
LDAP is a service. That service is defined at the production site.
It runs on the Tomcat, because you talked about the web app.
No, the web app runs on the Tomcat. The directory service is a completely different server, someplace in the network. Right. Okay. The next is OE Realm. Okay. A lot of open edge applications actually store user accounts, inside their own database tables. Okay. They do their own, identity management. Okay. So what happens when you want to your REST service to actually authenticate somebody using the accounts inside of your application? Okay. So what we did was we built a plugin, configurable plugin that goes into the REST service and allows it to go out to an app server, run a singleton class, and the code within that singleton class can return information about the account. Okay, it's not an authentication plugin. It doesn't do authentication. It is merely a source of user account information for the Spring Security authentication process. What's happening in here is we provide the client. You specify the configuration that it runs. This is stuff like, okay, what's the app server connection information? It is going to go off to something that you write and supply with your app server. What you're writing in there, we define an interface. What you write is to be able to satisfy certain requirements to return information. Okay, wherever you happen to want to go off and get the information from, it's a blank on the back end.
The OE Realm interface there.
Mm-hmm.
What you need
about. Yes. A quick overview of what's in that interface. There's actually three things minimally that you need to supply when you're working with OpenEdge. Okay, And this is, applies to not only the REST service interface, it applies to BPM. And we're going to be expanding this capability to other, you know, parts of the, you know, Progress, you know, product suite. Right? So it means that your app server can be a source for other parts, use your accounts. Okay? So the things that are required is look up, you know, see if a user account exists. To be able to get properties or attributes from that account, let's say things like, is the account locked? Is the account enabled? Okay, what are the roles, names that the account has been granted? Okay, from within your application. And the last one is, there's a request that sends a clear text password down so that it says, you validate the password. However you store passwords in, you know, your application. Okay, it's very open. You probably want to run this on an app server that allows only SSL connections. Okay. Now there's other things that you can take advantage of. You can write your own client. I mean, this is Progress, right? So if you wanted to write your own application and use, you know, these facilities, feel free to do so. This isn't limited to REST or BPM. Okay. Now, this is kind of, you know, just a checklist to go through when you're, if you're thinking about implementing one of these. You just need to go through. Remember, you're doing security, so don't offer up information that somebody could use to hack into your accounts. Okay? This is prime stuff. So you just need to, you know, provision your user accounts. Okay, you need to do something to secure this. So you need to put in code for the OERUM class in your app server. I suggest highly that you actually use some single sign-on between the OERUM client and the REST side and back to your app server, because you really don't want to give up account information without knowing that you're giving it up to a specific, you know, service. You have to consider multi-tenancy. Multi-tenancy is hard in this thing. I wouldn't suggest that you try it, but go ahead if you want to. Then optionally, you can add security, you can do things, more advanced security, which is you can send a copy of your OpenEdge domain registry from your database, okay, with the domain names and their access codes. You can make a key store out of it, put it in your REST adapter, and it can actually seal client principles inside the REST adapter and send them down to the app server for use during requests. Okay. Again, it's how much complexity that you want to really put into this. And then you need to deploy, you know, and test your classes. Why this is not working, because obviously my display is messed up. Yeah. Okay. So just from the deployment side of this. Okay. Remember, this is a complex. There's lots of moving parts, you know, in this. So you need to be prepared to, if you're going to move this out into a customer's site, okay, be able to help them with the configuration and debugging, you know, this stuff. In theory, this is a very simple thing to do, but like I said, there are a lot of connections, there's a lot of moving parts in here, there's a lot of points where it can actually fail. Once you get it configured and running, you're golden. But it's doing all this and meeting the security requirements. One of the things being is that if you go to a production site, they may not be comfortable with the fact that they're using default credentials to access your app server and get account information. Says, well, what if, you know, somebody brings in something from another company and puts it on my system? Can they then access it because it's using defaults? So it's, okay, how do you go about helping them to set it up so that the access is unique to their company and not, you know, other companies? Okay, so these are just details. Remember, you're doing security stuff here. The details count. Okay. Now, I'm going to tell you, you can make this work very simply. You really don't have to implement security. If you are 110% convinced that there is absolutely zero risk, you can make this a whole lot simpler by excluding all of the security parts and then going in, and it's as simple as an app server connection in that case. What makes this complicated is when you add the extra, you know, authentication security to the account data. Okay. I have time. If you're willing, I can give it, you know, another try at bringing up what this actually, you know, some of this stuff looks like.
You know what we need, Michael, is a hands-on workshop at Exchange for all this stuff.
Hey, tell you what, you propose one, I'll send you some information and help you hold it.
But it's not a bad idea.
No, it's not. I'll help whoever wants to, you know, take that on. Because it's not going to be me.
Are you going to Dusseldorf in November?
No. A long summer outing is for me is driving down to Westford and coming and visiting you guys. When in doubt, use your favorite editor. Be ready. Okay, is that visible out there? Thank you. Okay, so here's where you configure which template to use. And I expect that you probably will, you know, customize the template for your application. But right here is where that goes. It's the pathing says, yeah, off of the web application root to /web-inf. App security form LDAP.xml. All the security templates start with app security, followed by whether it's a basic authentication model or a form authentication model, followed by the authentication source for the user accounts. In this case, it's LDAP.
And this is in your web XML?
This is, I'm looking at web XML.
Yes, of your particular REST service.
No, this is in all REST services.
Okay, so it's not the web XML of your REST service, but the web XML of Tomcat?
No, it's the web XML for the application.
Now, what's the difference between form and basic?
Okay, basic is the HTTP stateless basic.
Okay.
Authentication, in other words, is the user ID and password is passed clear text in a header, and the authentication process happens on every request. So if you're going to something like an LDAP, think about that entire search and lookup process on every request. You generally don't want to do that. Okay, even if it's going to your app server, there's still a connection. It's expensive. Okay. The form is more the HTTP session model, where you actually log into the application, you have a session and a session context that stores the client principal from the authentication process, and then you have a defined logout, okay, which clears out the HTTP session and, you know, all of the storage. Okay, so those are the two basic models. Okay. So if I wanted to change from form to the OE realm, I would remove that. I would then come down as soon as this thing, again, this is bad today. Okay, so I just shifted from LDAP type authentication to using an OE realm type of form. So it's the shift back and forth is that simple. So if I look at the OE realm configuration file, the template, and we look at the configuration in here, there's two parts. There's an authentication provider. And in the authentication provider, there's a property user domain. Okay, that is the user domain, okay, the OpenEdge user domain, that will be inserted into the client principal if authentication is successful. Okay. The key, that is the OpenEdge domain's access code that will be used to seal that client principal. And the last one is AUFZ. It says, also include any of the roles that were returned, you know, during the authentication of the account.
Okay.
Anything that was granted by the remote account system. So you can not only put this stuff in here, but you can include it in your client principal, everything from the remote, you know, user account store. Now there's other properties here that you can play with, like you can add an expiration on the client principal to only allow it to be used for a certain period of time. You can stuff in properties that are unique to your application. Okay, so there's some other things that you can do, and I provide this as kind of a visual to what other things are available. Really, the important part is how it talks to the code, that interface that's running on the back end of your app server. and that is the realm URL, which is, guess what? It's a standard app server URL format. How do you connect to it? The next one is the realm class. This is actually the fully qualified, you know, package, you know, and class name of the what you have written and you want to implement on the back end. So you can put anything in there.
Is this template installed with 10.3?
Yes,
okay.
It 11, is.
11.3, sir. Sorry, man.
That was, I would have went with 10.
It's a trick question. 10.3.
Yeah, well, you
what's
got
coming out?
Don't want everybody thinking there's 10.3 coming out here.
Okay, I will not say anything. Okay, granted authorities. Okay, this is where, because, like I said, REST is role-based authorization. You have to, you know, return some roles, okay, from your accounts. If you don't use roles in your app server accounts, fake it out. You know, just statically return PSC user or something. Something that gets you past the, you know, the REST configuration. There's then the role prefix, okay, which is the same thing. Whatever, you know, you return from your code will have role in there. If you ever see in the debugging it doesn't work and says role underscore something, something, well, first clue is I shouldn't be returning role names with role underscore prefixes. The back end of this is totally written by you. There are some sample attribute, and these are abstract attribute names. They have no real bearing on the physical storage, okay, of what's in your user account. It's strictly so that like REST and BPM can ask for the same thing and get back the same type of information. So in this case, those are defaults, but you need to implement them in your code. And the minimum for REST is enabled, locked, and expired. Okay, those are standard part of the REST authentication process. Then, right down here, realm token file. What that is actually a sealed client principle that is used to single sign on to your app server and to your Realm class. There is a tool that we send along. It's called Gen SP something. What is it? Peter. Gen SPA. SPACP. Got it. Okay. What that does is it, from command line parameters, you enter in the user, the REST adapter's, you know, user ID for that, the domain password, and it generates you a sealed client principle. And you can then just distribute that, and that's how you would change it in a production space. You'd have the production admin run the command line utility, generate a new file, and then copy it into the REST service. And that's really the, you know, the configuration parts. What is probably more interesting, and you're all sitting there with bated breath, says, what does this thing look like? Okay. Server, let's see, for PSC, okay, so I'm going to bring up, that's, okay, I have a file, is you know, from the sample, has a list of defined names, and it's just, you know, mapping. So I can map external names to internal names inside my code. So here's, remember what I'm showing you is I have to make everything work every place, so my test code tends to be a little bit more complicated because I write it one time and then I test it with, you know, 20 different configurations. Okay. But it is literally a standard class file. It's run in the singleton mode. There is, here's the name of that interface. Oh. And I don't know what to exactly tell you about this thing. Here is the primary thing, which is validate user. This comes in, says establishes whether the user account exists or not. And notice it does just some input validation, but the main thing is that I'm using the underscore user table, you know, just to do some testing. And here I'm searching in the underscore user table for that account. Nothing, very simple. There is an oddity that you will have to deal with. And remember, it returns an integer identifier for that account. That integer identifier will have to be passed in on subsequent calls from the client to get the account attributes to validate its password. So, one of the things that I did was I added an integer, you know, into the table record. I created a sequence. So every time I found an account, if it didn't have a unique ID, and then I assigned one, you know, from the sequence. Then that was good from that point on, and I didn't have to worry about provisioning. But that's really all it is. Input. Username.
Mike, the example code out distributed or something on PSD?
There is some sample code. Okay, that's there. It's called Hybrid Realm. Okay, it's pretty much focused on BPM to begin with, but everything that I have, you know, was based on, you know, starting with the sample.
That's distributed with 11.3 when you install it?
It'll be installed when you with all the other samples from OpenEdge.
Oh, is there an 11.3 sample kit, a separate one? Or?
Doesn't that come with the documentation and distribution or something?
Yeah, I have to check. So it tend to be it was a separate download. Now I'm not sure for 11.3.
Yeah, they moved it.
The samples is one install
for 11.3.
There's the source for the 4GL tools. But then there's the documentation and samples.
Mike, question for you.
Yeah.
I've seen this code before. How, where that code fits, right? Like, I saw the code, but like my challenge was like, okay, now where do I place it? Like, suppose I'm exposing a procedure as REST. Do I, where that will fit? Where would I put that code? Would I put that inside the REST service? Or inside the observer, and it's going to be called automatically? How?
It'll be wherever your app server's ProPath.
Okay, you know, so specifies. My app server ProPath, do I have to call it from my REST service? Do I have to invoke any of those procedures or methods?
The REST client will call validate user. It will call, you know, repetitively call to get attributes of the account. and then it'll finish off with validating the password if the account is not locked, disabled, or, you know, something like that.
Do you have a sample of the calling procedure from the REST client?
The REST client doesn't call it.
No, the REST client doesn't call it.
The REST server called it.
The browser or the REST client passes the username and password to the web server.
Okay.
The web server, based on the configuration, either says, well, there's two parts to the Spring XML file you chose. One is, are you getting the name from the basic auth or the forum? Mm-hmm. So that's one half. And the other half is, once I get it, what do I then take that username and password and run it against?
And that was the app server.
And that's the app server. So if you use the OE realm, then you just pass in the name and password.
Yeah.
However you want, and then it just does it for you.
It does it for you. Okay.
Yeah.
And then the second thing is that whether you also are passing the sealed client principle on every call that's made from the REST client. There's one, am I authenticating and saying you're okay? And next is, on every call, do I want to pass the sealed client principle to the app server so that it then shows up in your business entity. And then once you do that, then you do the session, current request, get client principle.
Yeah. Okay, so this is just another plugin, Ricardo.
Uh-huh.
Just like the LDAP plugin, just like the plugin for, you know, the little text file with user account passwords in it. It's just another source of, you know, user accounts. So that OE realm configuration in the REST service, you're configuring it, how to connect to that app server, and how to call these internal methods.
Got it.
Okay? What you return from that is up to what you code.
Okay.
Yes?
But then, so once he's authenticated, the REST client is authenticated to the REST server, then the plumbing takes care of the continued authentication for subsequent calls.
That is correct. This is a contemporary, you know, process, which absolutely there's a hard dividing line between the account authentication part and the authorization to the resources in there. It really is a hard dividing line, and that makes that plugin ability, you know, viable.
But I'm saying I'm just not 100% clear. I just want to be sure.
Okay.
Once that the REST client, he passed the username and password, you used LDAP or OE realm or whatever,
mm-hmm.
to authorize him, he's now authorized. It's the plumbing that passed back some token to the client, and he's using that token every time to say, hey, it's still Paul.
Okay, the REST service, when you do form
right
type models, it uses the standard Java web server.
Okay.
It uses a cookie called J session ID.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, that's what goes back and forth.
Okay, now I got it.
So it's a standard thing so that you can, you know, run it in back of load balancers and such.
Gotcha.
Yes?
So when I implemented the hybrid realm class, it was authenticating my users using the underscore users table, which is a system table. And what I discovered in there was that table does not have a fields for rows. So I'm wondering, so where does, can I modify the hybrid class to use a different table, for example?
Of course.
Okay.
If you look at mine, there's a, I store my roles in a schema table called underscore sec hyphen granted role.
Okay.
It's what you do is you add records and says, you know, particular user ID at, you know, domain, okay, is a member of a certain role. I use that. You can add another table, okay, that is just a role table. It's really wherever you want to get it from. Okay, there's no requirements. You just have to supply a role.
I mean, down to if everybody is the same role, you can just return a static value.
Yeah, I mean, that's
whatever you want
also.
Okay,
so let me, I just want to talk about validate passwords. Notice, here's the user ID as that integer. that was returned from the, you know, the validate user call. And it's a clear text, you know, char input password. And same thing, I look up the account, make sure it's there. I run in code, check the password. I return, you know, true or false. Nothing, you know, nothing real hard there. It's however you store passwords and you validate them. Okay. Okay. You asked about returning attributes. Okay. Here's, you know, what I have in mind. Okay. I have a whole list of attribute names from that definition class that I've mapped to fields within the underscore user table. Got it? It's whatever you put in here. Okay. And there should be a adder roles. So what have I done here is I use the system to store role grants in there. So I just, you know, did a for each on underscore set granted role where the grantee field matched my user ID. Ta-da, roles.
You just put any, you put your own data in that table.
Yeah.
That table is not reserved for Progress's use for it.
No.
So you put all those underscore sec tables are not used.
We use them. As a matter of fact, the sec granted role is used to store the auditing privileges.
But
the original intention was to open it up. We just never got around to making a user interface so that you could play with it. So literally, that it. That's there, given name, description. Notice enabled. I actually go out, there is an enabled column in the underscore user table. I use it here. I have to manually code, you know, setting it. Now, we don't have a UI for it, but I do use it. And I return, you know, the appropriate values. And that is as much as there is about getting attributes from an account. I can't tell you no more because I don't know what all of your account, you know, storage is like. And you can go any place. It doesn't matter what you front end to this thing. It is an interface. Just keep in mind that what you're putting in here depends on how far that you want to spread this out, whether it's just for REST, BPM. So just, you know, while you're doing this, leave yourself some wiggle room. Okay, to make sure that you don't hard code too much stuff in there that cause you, you know, version problems later. Yeah. And that is, I don't know what else to tell you. That's it. Sorry, guys. This is not how I planned this to go.